Unsealed, the letters of Bess of Hardwick. Who's who in Bess's address book?
Bess knew everyone of name and fame in Elizabethan England, and all over the country, men with power and women with influence sat down to compose letters to Bess. Bess's correspondents were never all present in one room at the same time, but our exhibition unites them in a celebration of Bess and her letters. And the conversations between them bring news both good and troublesome. To many, meeting the Queen's interrogator and torturer, Richard Topcliffe, was very bad news indeed. But Bess is not at the receiving end of his wrath.
I can send your ladyship no more unpleasant news.
In his letter to Bess, Topcliffe writes about the Earl of Leicester, in whose employ he was at the time. Topcliffe informs Bess that the Earl is recovering from an illness and about his benevolent plans to sponsor two students.
My Lord of Leicester is very careful over his two young cousins, Master Edward and Master Henry, to have placed them in Oxford University, wishing that he may find his kindred to work his goodwill upon, as he hath done hitherto for many unthankful persons.
Bess lived in a world before newspapers were printed, and long before radio and TV presented news in detail and on a regular basis. But news still travelled very fast indeed. Anything that touched the life of the individual and the nation was written down, copied, repeated, and circulated. Sometimes news spread like wildfire, and the pursuit of Catholics and the future of the country were among the pressing news communicated to Bess by prominent figures. So although Richard Topcliffe himself kept stumm about his activities in his letter to Bess, she was very well informed. James Montagu, who later became Bishop of Winchester, wrote to her in 1606.
I think my Lord Cavendish acquainted you with all the Parliament news. It is a very joyful matter to see how well the King's Lords and Commons do agree together in one Parliament and against the Papists. The King offered his meditations to the House, as His Majesty called them. The Lords drew a bill and the Commons another, and these bills were all one in effect, to have some severe execution upon the priests and recusants for the late executions of the traitors. I am sure your Honour hath heard how they died. Your Honour's most faithful friend, James Montagu.
Bess's most impressive correspondent was Queen Elizabeth I, a powerful woman who always had an eye and a thumb on Bess, a woman who left many impressions over the years. In good times she partook in Bess's life and was glad when the young widow Bess made a good match. And she also granted Bess's widowed daughter Elizabeth Lennox the custody of her child, Arbella Stuart. Many had tried to influence the Queen to the contrary, and so once custody was granted, Bess sent Elizabeth I a heartfelt letter of thanks. But at other times, the relationship between Bess and the Queen, or rather the control Elizabeth I had over Bess's life, took a different turn. Bess's fourth husband George, the 6th Earl of Shrewsbury, was ordered to be the keeper of Mary Queen of Scots for many years. The Queen acknowledged this at the end of a letter to Bess and George. But that did not make the task easier.
To our right trusty and well-beloved cousin and counsellor, the Earl of Shrewsbury, and to our right dear and right well-beloved cousin, the Countess, his wife. Our very good cousins, we do not forget our old debt to you, the same being as great as a sovereign can owe to a subject. Through your loyal and most careful looking to the charge committed to you, we and our realm enjoy a reasonable government, the best good hap that any prince on earth can befall. We graciously and thankfully acknowledge the same, whereof you may make full account to your comfort when time shall serve. Given under our signet at our manor of Greenwich, the 25th day of June, 1577, and in the 19th year of our reign.
Mary Queen of Scots herself also wrote to Bess with news.
My known good lady, I send this bearer to you to know of my good lord and friend's well-doing, as to impart to you both such news as I have.
Caught in a web of intrigues and kept prisoner for much of her life, Mary always looked out for information that would influence her situation.
My lord of Mora and 5 or 6 particular men are bound to all extremity against me and mine. One of his men refuses the Queen plainly, and her counsel of any agreement, and by means he thinks to have in court, he thinks so to persuade the Queen that she shall seem angry in words. I believe many will mislike Murray's double dealing. I pray God to keep you, and bless my niece and goddaughters.
And then there was Arbella, Bess's granddaughter, who grew up to be a difficult teenager and who was also, by order of the Queen, placed in Bess's care. Arbella became another of Bess's famous correspondents, one with a very distinctive voice.
I am neither so disobedient nor inconsiderate as your ladyship might think me.
But we will hear more about Arbella at another time. There are many other voices and faces, both famous and infamous, present among Bess's letters. Her correspondence with them placed her into a network of influential people in Elizabethan England. Of course, neither Bess nor her correspondents knew that their letters would be the stars of an exhibition hundreds of years after they were written. But such is the beauty of writing history.
And so, wishing you all honour and happiness, I will take my leave. From Hardwick, Bess Murray. Your ever-assured, loving friend, Elizabeth Shrewsbury.
This podcast was written, narrated, and produced by Anke Timmermann. You will find a list of all contributors on our webpage, www.bessofhardwick.org/listen.